As so often is the case, the Pharisees are trying to trip Jesus up. They ask him a trick question. Let's get bogged down into the details of divorce. Who can do it? What are the conditions, etc., etc.? And as so often, Jesus says, let's not talk about divorce. I want to talk about marriage. And so he elevates the conversation, and he does so by quoting the poetic explanation in Genesis. The two shall become one flesh. Well, they don't literally become one flesh, do they? And yet, in a poetic, figurative kind of language, that's what happens. For each person, there is a kind of an external variation of reality. You know, our body type, the language we speak, the culture we grew up in, our family of origin. There are so many exterior kinds of things that have a lot to do with who we are. But deep down underneath all that exterior, in the deepest essence of who a person is, there is what we often call soul. And that remains the same throughout life. So you're the same at 16 as you are at 40, as you are at 70. The externals change. Your body ages, your social contacts, your family, all kinds of things change. But that deepest interior part of who you are remains the same. When two people fall in love with each other, they're often drawn initially by the externals, the way a person looks, the way they talk, the way they relate to you. But when they really fall deeply in love and marry, then the externals have a tendency to kind of fall away, and they're not as important, because what's happening is one has fallen in love with the deepest heart, the deepest soul of that other person. And in that sense, they become one. There is a way in which humanity can be one with one another despite the externals. Interesting, when Mark tells this, when he relates Jesus' teaching about marriage, he talks about a little child being in their midst. Now, I don't know how much coincidence it is, but for the last 3 weeks, we have been reading directly, verse after verse, from the Gospel of Mark. And in each one of these Sundays, there's been a child involved. Jesus takes the advantage of teaching his disciples by using a child. You're arguing among yourselves about who's the greatest. Here's the greatest, this child, this innocent one. Today, you're talking about relationships, you're talking about being welcomed into the kingdom. Okay, here's a little child. Unless you receive the kingdom like this child, you shall not enter it. What does Jesus mean by that? Children are innocent, they're open, they're honest, because they haven't become sophisticated enough to be otherwise. And one of the things about children is that they accept their source, which is their parents. And they trust their parents and they believe everything their parents say. I'm talking about before the loss of innocence, before you find out that your parents weren't perfect, okay? But in that early childhood stage where you just implicitly trust, that's a kind of a vertical relationship between a child and parents. Now, in that second reading from the letter to the Hebrews, the author says, he who was the source and origin of it all has taken on our humanity, taken on the sufferings of our lives, even death, but he shares in his humanity the same origin as they. And therefore, he's not ashamed to call them brothers and sisters. We have the same Father that Jesus does. In the same way that Christ is the Son of God, We are daughters and sons of our Heavenly Father. We share the same origin that Jesus does. And therefore, we're brothers and sisters with Him. Marriage and that kind of deep relationship it symbolizes for the church and for the world, it sacramentalizes, let's say, the horizontal relationship, the union that we can have with one another. And children symbolize the vertical relationship that we have with God. It's the two bars of the cross, the vertical and the horizontal, and both go together. You can't have the cross without both. You can't have salvation without both. And so despite our failures, despite the fact that marriages fail sometimes, and even in so-called good marriages, it's never perfect. We sin against one another, we hurt each other, and we have to reconcile. And in family life, children aren't always obedient, and they sometimes are disappointed even by their parents. I mean, there's failure and sin all through this. But Jesus and the scriptures and the church and the liturgy still talk about this ideal kingdom language. Not to make us feel guilty because we never fully achieve it, but to keep that goal ahead of us. We're not going to talk about the details, Jesus says. We're going to talk about the kingdom. We're going to talk about the ideal, and we're all going to strive for that as much as we possibly can. And so despite our failures, something draws us here Sunday after Sunday around this altar where we remember the perfect union that Jesus had with his Father. Not my will, but yours be done. Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. You know, that human desire to escape suffering, the human desire to be willful and do it our way. And yet he stops himself short and says, no, not my will, but yours be done. We celebrate that vertical union that Jesus had with the Father. But we also, in this fellowship meal of eating and drinking him, we celebrate that horizontal relationship that we have with one another. Despite the sin of separation, despite the failures, we're all one. Deep down, below the exterior parts of our humanity, deep down in our soul, we're all children of our Heavenly Father. We're all brothers and sisters of Christ and of one another.